Accession number 30063, reel 14.
Mr. Reed, reel 14. When you were with the SAS, and, you know, for the time that you were with them, did you consider yourselves an elite unit, as against probably the Norman infantry?
Yes, he did. Yeah, but I should make it clear that the SBS was on the raiding forces, or as it had been, were one in the same unit, really. But we serviced the whole main body of the SBS and the what were now raiding forces.
The discipline in the unit, was that different from the normal unit? You might
discipline
say the infantry
was entirely different. We used to have a major, Bill Comper, who was an explosives expert. And he was a cracker. He used to go around blowing things up when they had nothing to do. You know, he was absolutely mad. Mad as can be. Sterling was the bloke there. If anyone crossed him, he would never be on a charge. He would sort them out. He would sort them out. And there would be what was known there as RTU, which was Return to Unit.
Yes,
so that wasn't very nice for someone who was being returned to unit from a very, very important part of raiding forces. It wasn't accepted as being nice.
Well, you've intimated there that people were experts in their range, whatever they did. You mentioned the man with the explosives.
Yeah, Bill Comper.
Do you remember any others?
Not really, they were all pretty well, we were all, well look at me, I was signals, but I was well trained in machine guns, and those things you had to do. As far as being specialists in any one given subject, if they were, they always had a secondary, maybe a third arrow to the bows. So, they were pretty well experienced in many things. It was just Bill, who was a major, and he used to dictate where the bombs would go. Put one there and put one there and get out of the way and blow it up, sort of style. Whereas the ordinary troops in the field weren't allowed to do that.
The structure of the special boat squadron that you were in, what was that?
Well, they used canoes. Their forte was getting in, not fighting, but getting in unseen, unheard, doing the job they had to do, blow it up and do what they really had to do, and then get out quick. Now, that was rather difficult because they used to go in, even if they went by submarine, they would get the kayak, the two kayak, and stuff it in the water, and then would have to get in there from the submarine, which was no mean feat in itself, getting off a submarine into a little kayak and taking stuff with you. So they had to do, so there was no real commands, they had a job to do. You're going across there, you're going to land at so-and-so, we want that blown up. Anything else you see, blow it up. Or put time pencils in. And they'll get out of it quick. Because they couldn't fight. They didn't have the equipment to fight. But they had the equipment to place limpets on things and blow them up. So that was their forte. So as far as having the luxury that the raiding forces had of... In the deserts, they had the services of signals, they had four men to a jeep, and everybody was versed in machine guns and explosives and everything else, and when it came to push, they went in and did it. But the SBS couldn't do that. They were silent. They would get away under there. And I do believe then it was, there was a state of flux in the Eastern Mediterranean side, with raiding forces taking the role of the what is it again? I've forgotten now. The ones at Tobruk. They were taking the role of the ones at Tobruk, SBS, the raiding forces. And there was still a feeling of, we are the SBS, you are the raiding forces. You can go, the Navy will take you, and that's what I want to come to next. So the SBS really will be looked at to provide other services.
How it was organised, was it kind of organised on the lines of, say, a battalion and companies and platoons?
No, there wasn't enough men there. The equipment they used was not on. If they had to carry little things like limpets in a canoe and paddle your own canoe up that was the way. But they were governed by the number of people they had.
And who was commanding this lot? Was it Stirling, or was he still with SAS?
No, it wasn't Stirling. The SBS had more or less, they were their own masters, you know. They went along there. There used to be quite a bit of liaison between the two, but doing jobs, you wouldn't get the SBS and raiding forces because it went two entirely different facets of dealing with the wartime situation. The SBS crept in and crept out, and nobody knew anything about it. Unless if they did, they were in trouble. And the raiding forces went in, and here, when I talked about the North African desert, four people to a jeep, and maybe two jeeps, used to go out and raid an aerodrome with 15, 60 aircraft on there and blow the damn things up. So here they were getting away in the north with a jeep and four people in, but where are they now? Having to go to Italy to get at the Italians and the Germans who were there. So they're thinking about, in terms, what do we do here? Are we going to pack in and go to England and go in from there? Or do we stay out here and enjoy the life? No. What we did was, what they did was create SRS now. We moved from raiding forces to special raiding forces. And literally they were basically the same thing, but they were special raiding forces. They did the raids. We did the raids on there. The SBS would go along, and if they could find good targets, bingo, they'd get it up there.
So they would have, as you say, special tasks allotted to them, which were different from the kind of thing SES did.
That's right.
They were much different.
Eventually, I think, and I couldn't be sure on this, the SBS went back to England. And so they were completely then divorced from raiding forces, or the SAS, whatever you like to call them now.
What was your role in this? What were you doing?
With the SBS, it was communications more than anything else. And that wasn't easy, because they used to get swamped in water and God knows what else, and shortwave radio, and it didn't work really. They didn't have the room, imagine sitting in just a little cockpit and upset, couldn't do it. So the role there was not really in, there was no such thing as getting into a kayak and going just to keep communication. You could keep those, but occasionally they went haywire. So eventually the SBS were taken over, not taken over, they had been there, and they finished up in England. Because what's happening now, the war is over. You've got to think, oh, people, we were thinking of, the war's over, it's finished.
Yes, the entire war.
The entire war. Because we defeated them in North Africa. North Africa was free, and that was the only place where fighting was going on. Maybe in Burma, they were having a go there, but on a minor scale.
This is before D-Day, of course.
This is before D-Day. So now you begin to think, oh, we've got to get into Europe here. Which way do we get in?
Before we go to there, can we talk a little bit more about your role in the SBS? Yeah. And did you actually go on any of these special raids?
No, not on those. Possibly on the ship, or maybe an ML or a little bit bigger ship would take them over. And we would be on board the ship with them to keep in touch with them if possible. But not to go and... You see, you're not going to have bloody kayaks all over the shore waiting to get in and hide. Because it's, again, come back to the attitude of in quietly and out without disturbing anybody.
What was the means of communication between, say, you on the ship?
Handsets.
They had handsets by now.
If you were on board the ship, They would. I presume it was handsets. I never really got through to it, but it couldn't be anything else. Because the set was too big to move. It was only a handset. And they were brand new things, you know, that had been created, and there was all sorts going wrong with the damn things. So, really, you didn't get to that stage.
So communication must have broken down quite often.
Yeah, they do.
And was there any backup call, any backup in which they could signal what they were doing?
No, you'd be... What would happen would be, if everything went well, the SBS would be away on their own. Nobody knew about them, where they were going. The Navy probably taking them, because they couldn't paddle all that way up there. They were there to be taken out by the Navy. They got in and got out and come away again. If they didn't get out, they're in trouble.
Whereabouts were they raiding? If you were going on board the ship that was taken and basically linked with communications, which particular raids do you recall that you were in that capacity?
Think in terms of roads. This is down in Dodecanese, whether they did it or not down there. And then, as I say, the second front was coming. So what was decided then was the SBS will go home. They went home. The SRS, Special Raiding Squadron, will be stationed in the Middle East. And what we have to do, I'm not repeating it, I'm assuming it, right? We're all there stuck in Palestine, Israel. And coming down there, that's right, with Special Raiding Squadron, we were to be used as a detour from anything that happened in Europe. We were going to go up there along the Mediterranean. We went into Greece. The Germans were pulling away. We came back and went back to Palestine. That was our headquarters.
How long were you with the SBS before you went to the SRS? We getting a lot of these.
I don't think we shouldn't get misunderstood here. I was never a real second part of the SBS. The SBS, if they wanted a radio then, signs, was maybe just one-way transmission or something. we would have to be lifted. So it wasn't a case of having a nice sort of setup and getting on the radio and then they'd come back. Oh, things are great, we're getting listened to that. So that was a minor detail, really.
So if they were going on a raid and they wanted a signal with them, not I don't mean in the kayaks, but in the command vessel, they may say to you, you've got to go on that. Were you in a kind of a pool situation where you were drawn
that,
on?
That was a supply, but they were themselves so secretive about this that they kept the numbers down to as far as they could.
Do you remember how many that you actually, not on the raid itself, as you said, in the kayaks, but that you went on where you were in this communication situation on a boat. Do you remember how many of those you went on?
Oh, no, there was only one at the most, sort of style. I really don't think the SBS did much in there when the desert was over. You're right, they've been created now, the SBS. And we've got to think in terms, when it was decided, they would go back to England or so. So
but you didn't go back with them?
We didn't go back with them, no. We stayed in Palestine.
So we've had you in the SAS, the SBS,
we've been servicing,
and now you're in the SRS.
Yeah. Well, the SRS was a new version of the SAS. Later, you'll find out that they've now transferred back from the SRS to the SAS again.
So where were you based with the SRS? We're still
same
in Palestine.
Place, Naharia.
Still in Palestine.
Naharia, yeah. We never moved out of the Middle East.
What was their role? What were they doing?
Right, coming to it now, what could they do? What could they do? The idea was to spread the German forces as far apart as possible. And to do that, you had to let them know that someone, somewhere, was knocking hell out of Italy, knocking hell out of Greece, knocking right away along the Med. So they've got to make a show. Now, what happened? This is it. They went into Greece, the SAS, went in the islands where they were operating. This is the Dodecanese, where we're operating. And now the Germans have got to think in terms of keeping all those forces down in the Dodecanese because the SAS were going and raiding them. And if they left it, well, that was it, you see. So that was the role of the SAS. What happens now is the Second Front is rearing its ugly head. Is the Second Front going to come from the Mediterranean side? This is the Germans thinking now. Or the European side? Right along the French coast? Which way is it going to come from? Is it going to come from both ways and squeeze them? Well, we didn't have enough down in the Dodecanese to have a war with the Germans. We didn't want to know. We would let them know we're there and keep happy and go and do a raid here and a raid there and make them think, where are they coming at us next? Or is the Second Front going to be here now?
Did you get involved in any of these wide-ranging raids that they were putting on? Were you actually involved in any of the raids?
Oh, yes.
No,
yes.
Any that you recall that you went
yes.
to?
Yes. These, first of all, I was saying earlier that the method of the SAS now, or SRS, had changed completely from four men to a jeep. We didn't have a jeep. We had water. We didn't have a jeep. So one way or another, you've got to get ashore at Sicily, where we decided, or where the hierarchy decided to go there. So what have we got for Sicily? What we do is want to take Sicily and go up through Italy. So first of all, you get the fleet together. I don't know whether I mentioned we were down the Suez Canal at the bottom with the Ulster Monarch ship.
Yes, you mentioned that.
I mentioned that. All that training was over, and all that training was purely for the Italian counter or the Greek or what. Well, we did Greece, and we went up as far as Salonika.
Are these raids that you're talking about?
These were combat. He went in, and the whole unit went in. And they're talking about four men. You're talking about a unit now, and maybe 30 or 40 men going in and doing it. Now, it's much more difficult to keep 30 or 40 men undercover than it is to keep four men in a jeep, because the four men in a jeep run away. So they couldn't do that. Then we had to go in. So going in from the Ulster Monarch, first of all, I think it was the glider pilots, the gliders, went into Sicily early in the morning, 1, 2. And then we were going in by water. The only thing is the gliders didn't get there. They dropped on the rocks and knocked hell out of them.
And were you part of this, actually?
Yes, we were going in.
Raiding on the landing.
Yeah.
And you're still with the Ulster Monarch?
Pardon?
You're still with the Ulster Monarch?
Yeah, the Ulster Monarch. We said, well, the Ulster Monarch was further. Once we got ashore in Sicily, that was it. The main troops followed us in a few hours later.
And did you go in with that group? You yourself?
I was on the Ulster Monarch going along to Augusta Beach. Now, they went along to Augusta, landed shortly away from it, and that's where we took a hammering. And there were quite a few. The beach was wide open, there was nowhere to see.
And had you to land with them on the beach?
Yes, yes, yes.
So what was happening? You say you took a hammering,
well,
in what way?
You were in communication then. That was so big, as far as the SAS was concerned, that it was too big. They were up there, what they were doing now, and they didn't like it, the main body of the SAS, was using them as fighting troops with a larger command.
Which they weren't really trained for, were they, in that sense?
No. Mm. All they were trained for was going in and going out. But there, they had to do that. Anyway,
can you recall you landing on that beach? What was happening that you remember when you landed on that beach?
Everybody was running away, I think, because I remember running right across the beach with them, you know.
Running over the beach, yeah.
And there was a communication there between the two, saying what was happening. And the idea was to chase them or take them right up the coast to Catania. Now, what you wanted to do was get them out of the way there, because if you weren't careful, the blokes on the other side, on the north of the island, the Germans and the Americans were chasing them. So you would have the Americans and Germans coming in like this.
I'm particularly interested in your own memories and your role in this.
Yeah. That was mainly radio. And the radios worked okay, but again, we were governed to some extent by the life of a battery. You've got and one battery, it lasted quite a long time, you know. One battery was on a cradle, and one bloke was carrying it.
So, had the radios improved since the early days of the war? Now, thinking back to the ones that you used when you first came in and where we are now.
Improved from the 9 set, which was a big clumsy thing in the tanks. It filled the back end of a turret up that came around. They were all right, those 9 sets, but you couldn't lift them up and it started to be part of a tank, you know. And then the 11 set, which we used to have in the desert with them. They weren't bad, but it had to be more. They were built for speech and Morse code, but it had to be Morse code because the Morse signal carried much further away than any speech signal did. So they were never used. Maybe for informing them what had happened at Army headquarters, sort of stuff. Those short range things. Apart from the Morse code, well, that's where we were in as well, because they wanted someone to say, get round the left or get round the right, or we destroyed 50 planes, whatever it is.
And then, of course, now you're into Sicily, and had that set changed? Which set were you using now?
Oh, Sicily was a backpack set, I forget the name of it now, backpack set, again with the battery going there. So you've either got to have one man permanently carrying the battery, or else the battery put down and the set put down and it's working there off the doings. Keeping up with them, it's so flexible. The whole movement of the thing was you didn't know where the hell you were at times. You would know it now, but that was Sicily. Back onto after Augusta. Now Augusta, don't get mixed up, was just up the road from the island, from the place where we left. What was it again? I mentioned it.
Syracuse, were they there?
No, the one where we left. Forgotten it now. It was a big bay. Mm. It was a big bay.
Augusta Bay, was it? Did you say it was Augusta?
No, we're at Augusta now. No. We're at Augusta.
Sorry, when you landed with your wireless, was it your role to keep close to the commanding officer so that he could get his messages through?
Yeah. But they weren't so reliant upon a radio until it did happen, sort of style. But running forward, the main troops, and I'm talking about 30 or 40 of them now, not three, two or three, they were forward, they were ahead of the main troops,
main landing,
who were now coming in down further down the coast.
Were you under fire?
Under fire, yeah. Oh, not me personally, but yet firing at anybody shooting. They were sweeping the beaches. That's where there was quite a few SAS blokes killed. And it was something I hadn't experienced before, because in the last actions they had were in the desert, and they could get away or get on foot. Well, you couldn't get on foot if the bloody thing was full of water, you know. So they were covered.
Yes, you were in the.
They were almost going back to ordinary infantry.
So, do you know what the particular objective was for your unit?
Well, the objective was to break any resistance down that the Germans and Italians were showing in front of you.
On the beach, in the beach area.
On the beach, in Augusta, which was further up, and this was the idea to go up there as far as Catania was concerned, have them come along in Palermo, along the north of the island, so you've got that part of the island.
So you've landed on shore with your unit, and you've cleared the beach, presumably. Where did you move with the rest of the men?
You moved your part and parcel of the troops moving there.
Oh, the infantry's coming by now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you wanted. Because we were then back to the boat. That was our job. We've opened them up. We opened them. And we were back to the boat. I don't know if I want to tell you this or not, but strangely, when we're going through Augusta,